This is basically a review class. I don't know what happened to the recordings, because there's a reading which contains two short, really beautiful lojongs, which you can read. They're not really in code, so they're really, really nice. So read those things. And then he talked about a homework question from class six that they hadn't gotten to in the text and is not in the reading. And he went over those. Now, it's in the answer key that you have, but it's four metaphors for the attachments. And these were given by Sakya Pandita, who wrote Freedom for the Four Attachments. Anybody remember? Oh, goodness. How about Sachin Kungan Ningpo? That sound familiar? I hope you're nodding your heads. Anyway, his son, who was Sakya Pandita, gave metaphors for the four attachments. And the first attachment is anybody attached to this life is no Dharma practitioner. And the metaphor is life is like a bubble. It can end in a second. And with these metaphors, the Sakya Pandita gives an antidote and a result for each of them. So the antidote for being attached to this life is to meditate on death. And the result when you do that is that your practice of Dharma actually becomes Dharma at that point. Now, this first attachment is really kind of the most important one, and Geshe-la went over it. You know, in the class. And it has to do with the fact, you know, being attached to this life isn't about, you know, being attached to milkshakes or lattes or jobs or money or cars or anything else. What it's about is not understanding karma and emptiness, meaning being attached to this life means that you think, you're convinced, you operate as if things came from their own side and not from you. And the point here is that if you're not attached to this life, meaning that you've understood karma and emptiness, then you begin to make progress because you know what to do when things don't go right for you, so you don't replant those seeds. You understand that everything is coming from you. So that's basically what, you know, what this first attachment's about. The second attachment is being attached to the world or being attached to the three realms. And anyone attached to the three realms has no renunciation. The metaphor is eating poison. And the antidote is to think of the problems of the vicious cycle of life. And we have no problem meditating on that. You know, we know what the problems are. And then the result, if we do that, is that your Dharma practice becomes a path, meaning that everything that you do becomes a path to enlightenment. And remember, when we talk about path, we're actually talking about a state of mind. So when you think of the problems, you know, of samsara, the problems of, you know, normal life, and you understand why those are there, then those states of mind become a path to get rid of them even more, to do the right thing. The third attachment is anybody attached to their own needs alone is no bodhisattva. And the metaphor is killing the son of a powerful king. The antidote is bodhicitta, you know, meditate on bodhicitta, the wish for enlightenment. And the result when you do that is that it removes the first great mistake of the path, which is not living for others. Now, the metaphor, killing the son of a powerful king, you know, if you kill the son of a powerful enemy, you know, the enemy will get even with you. So there's no point in doing that. It'll only bring you even more, more suffering. So what, you know, the metaphor is, you know, if we look out for your own needs, you know, that will literally kill us. And the thought of caring for other people, bodhicitta, is essential to becoming enlightened. You can reach nirvana, you know, without having bodhicitta. That's the path, the lower path. But to become enlightened so that you can really, you know, pass dharma along, you can teach other people, you can emanate on a billion planets, you have to have bodhicitta to do that. And bodhicitta then, the more we meditate on that, the more we meditate on the wish, you know, that will remove the error we have of focusing just on our own needs. And then the final attachment is if you grasp to things as self-existent, you have no worldview. And the metaphor is grasping to a mirage as being drinking water. The antidote to that is not to hold to the two extremes. And the result of that is Buddhahood. So, you know, this grasping to a mirage as being actual drinking water is the same thing as, you know, grasping to things as self-existent. A mirage is not drinking water. It looks like it, but it isn't. You know, and everything else appears to us to be self-existent, but it isn't. So this metaphor is really pretty neat, I think. And if you don't have, if you have this grasping to things as self-existent, then you don't have worldview, meaning you don't understand emptiness and you don't understand karma. So, let's do this review. The first Lojong we studied was the 8 verses, you know, and it talks about what to do about depression. And this is really important, you know, in today's world, both in terms of our practice and in terms of teaching. You know, you're going to have students when you begin to teach these who are depressed, and you have to be able to show them maybe why they're depressed and what to do to get out of it. And, you know, so the 8 verses talk about that. And then it talks about why it's really, really bad to allow bad thoughts to go on. Bad thoughts basically are depression for you. I mean, they can be anger too, but a lot of them lead to depression. And if you're depressed, it's kind of a vicious circle. The more bad thoughts you have about yourself, basically, the more you do have. And you really have to kind of take hold of yourself to pull yourself up out of that. Yeah, you can use drugs, but they sort of, what do? They slow down your thought processes. So you don't, you know, when you're taking medication for depression, it's difficult to really be, you know, on top of things. So you know, the 8 verses, that part about depression, is very important to us as Buddhists. And then there was a Lojong by a Kagyu master. He says, your mind is the Buddha. Now, it's important to realize that this statement is not to be taken literally. Our mind is not the Buddha. If it was, we would be Buddhas. You know, it's probably a good idea for you to make a collection of scripture quotations that are not to be taken literally as you come across them. There's lots of what we call Dharma rumors, which are misinterpretations. They're kind of easy way out ideas that are popular in the West. They've been misinterpreted by people who read them. People in the 70s would go to Dharamsala or to India and spend a year and get themselves enlightened, they would think, and come back and teach without really understanding what was going on. Taking things literally that were meant figuratively. So, always evaluate things that you read. Do they match with your experience? Do they match with what you've been taught before? And if they can't be taken literally, then find the figurative interpretation for yourself. And then next comes the seven-step lojong. It's important to know about this lojong. It was kept secret for several centuries. And why was that? This review is simply going to be pointing out things that's important to know. Geshe-la told us that in this class that he and a couple of other fellow students of Ken Rinpoche went through the answer keys that they'd been using to correct the answers in the previous classes in this course and rewrote them so that they were very clear. This course has to do with developing bodhicitta, developing the good heart. And it's important that we know it very, very well. So he said, look at the answer key. Look at this new answer key. He said, the questions on the final aren't meant to trick you. I want you to know this and know it very, very well. So study the answer key. That's very good. So, the lojong was kept secret. Why? Take a look. This is one of the homework questions. It's important to know that. If it was kept secret, why is it an open teaching? Think about that. Also, you should know the names of the texts you're studying. We've gone over that many, many times in classes before. And here, somebody asks you, what are you studying in this course? You would say, it's the we've studied the eight verses and we've studied the 7-point mind training. And the person you asked said, that's really good. What are some of the 7 points? And you need to be able to tell them. You need to be able to talk about the eight verses to them. So learn these things. Take time. Study. There's a point in the 7-point mind training that says that between meditation sessions, you should be a figment of your imagination. And you should be able to explain to somebody what that means. The lojongs are kind of mystical. If you read them, you might be able at this point to understand them fairly well, but somebody who didn't know them would, it'd be kind of new agey, where it's talking about stuff that nobody can really understand. There's no meat to it. So you need to be able to teach these texts. You must be able to understand what it means when a text says you should be a figment of your imagination. So think about that. You need to be able to explain the texts in terms of practice, or in terms of how you should think about something. There's another line in the 7 points about powa. How to send your mind on at the time of death. And you have to really understand what this means, too. It's if you read it, it sort of means that when you die, you at that point can send your mind on to a higher place, you know, like a good rebirth or a Pure Land or something like that. That's not what this means. When you are dying, you lose the capacity to think very well, and you'll not be able to do it. So what this is, Poa, is about practicing now, you know, thinking about the death process now, so that when the time comes, it will be kind of automatic for you. You won't have to think about it. And doing this now sharpens your mind in a way. It gives you good karma. It lets you understand things more deeply. And that's what this line is about, this item in the 7-point mind training. Then there's a statement about don't expect anything. And, you know, at some level, don't expect anything means, well, okay, we shouldn't expect to be paid. You know, we offer teachings free, things like that, you know. But really what this statement has to do is being totally giving with Dharma to anybody. You don't hold anything back. You give, give. You have to do it appropriately. You have to know what the person, you know, you have to know how to explain something to a particular person. But don't expect anything means just give, you know, give the Dharma. Don't hold back. With regard to the 4 attachments, you need to write these down on the final, so learn them. You also will give the lineage of the text, and that's in the answer key, too. Being attached, oh, we already did that. Then we did a 12-point lojong that is nearly identical with a Boy Scout code. Is this a coincidence? You know, something written 1,200 or 1,000 years ago that is, you know, a big thing right now with Boy Scouts. Is that a coincidence? You know, and the thing here, the point here is that you will reach a point in your spiritual career where you begin to view earlier events in your life, you know, where certain people were trying to introduce profound ideas to you. You know, so today, you know, in Boy Scouts and, you know, other organizations do the same thing. You know, the Boy Scouts simply repeat these 12 things, and there's a little bit of explanation about them. But really, those are incredibly profound teachings. To be able to understand them and put them into practice, you know, when you're 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, is very important. And even if you don't understand them, the ideas are put there. And then later on, you begin to review them and think, ah, you know, neat, okay. So, you know, you have to consider that there are beings all around you, you know, all the time, who are trying to help you, you know, who are guiding your life. Now, in this respect, you know, we haven't discussed Tantra yet, and we're not going to until you complete the ACI courses. But you should begin to think about how these strange beings, you know, these angels, do they really look the way they're put, you know, they're painted on tantras and pictures? You know, where do they come from? You should be thinking about that, you know. You must think that these tantric beings come from you. They come from your past karma. And one of the reasons Tantra is secret is that you have to develop the causes to be able to meet these beings. And if you haven't, then an empowerment is not going to work for you. And that's why we have the, you know, the 12, the 18 courses to begin with. Basically a 7-year course of study, intense, to generate the karma so that you can succeed in Tantra. you know, these tantric beings really are no different from the people around you, you know, especially your teachers, you know, the Dharma teachers and then your school teachers or anybody else that you've learned anything from. They're no different from those. They're coming from you. So there's another sort of dangerous comment. I think this was in the Wheel of Knives, you know. Life is like an illusion. And you have to be able to explain what that means in your life, you know. What it means is that everything you experience is a projection of your karma, of your mind. It's due to the way you've treated others in the past. And since that is so, then you must keep your morality. You must lead an ethical way of life. You know, you have to be prepared, you know, for students when you begin teaching, you know, who will quote this line to you, you know, as support for doing anything you want. You know, life, it doesn't make any difference. Life's an illusion. Life is but a dream, you know. I think, what, in England, childhood rhyme, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. That's this. It's the kind of eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die attitude. That's not what this line means. Life is an illusion is not that. It's the fact that everything we experience comes from us. So in order to take care of other people, to become enlightened, even to reach nirvana, we have to understand that that's the case and that we must generate the causes to do the things that we need to do to reach our goals. You know, so do your book, keep your vows, take care of other people. That's kind of the bottom line here. So it's a nice short class today. You got any questions about anything, actually? We can talk about that.